evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
I think it was petty and vindictive. And again, it qualifies my statement that we are not kids in Parliament. We are all adults.
An opposition Zambian legislator plans to file a petition at the High Court on Monday to challenge his suspension from parliamentary work.
People are still being butchered and others meet. So I wanted to get the international community and the world to understand.
A former governor of Kasai province says the international community should pressure the DRC government to ensure the country's peace and stability.
Many government workers believe as if French should be the only language that should be spoken in Cameroon. I was irritated when I went to an office and I spoke in English and one man said, "Je ne connais pas votre anglais là."
And Cameroon's president orders officials to enforce a law on bilingualism and make life easier for English speakers. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An opposition Zambia legislator plans to file a petition at the High Court on Monday. The petition seeks to challenge his suspension from parliamentary work. This after the speaker moved against Zulu for a remark which some of his colleagues say was inappropriate. Contributing to a debate on the floor of parliament, Zulu said all lawmakers shave their pubic hair, which he says means they are all adults. But some of his colleagues condemned his remark and demanded he withdraw it. Challenging his punishment, Zulu says the decision to suspend him violates the natural course of justice as well as parliamentary procedures. For more reaction to challenge his suspension, I reach parliamentarian Munir Zulu.
First of all, driving to parliament only to listen to parts from parliamentary that have been suspended for having used an parliamentary language, which is pubic hair. I think it was petty and vindictive. And again, it qualifies my statement that we are not kids in parliament. We are all adults. I didn't insult no one. I don't know when the word pubic became an insult.
Munir, they are saying that they felt offended because Zambians usually don't say that in the public, let alone in a parliamentary...
But there is a member from the ruling party that used an F word on the floor of the House 3 months ago. He's never been penalized. And then I was called a rat by a minister. They were not penalized. What's so special that only I should be penalized? I'm going to the High Court on Monday to get a stay against that decision. Because the rules of natural justice would have demanded that I be heard in the Privileges Committee, and I was never heard.
People are saying that you are full of controversies, and this is yet another controversy you created to draw attention to yourself. How do you respond to that?
Mr. Peter, on Thursday, the speaker requested that my phone be grabbed, and I was just sitting in my seat. My phone didn't ring, so where is the attention? The other time I was chased for being seated in Parliament. Instead of them chasing the one who rose behind my seat, they chased me out of Parliament. How?
Under normal circumstances, I understand when things like that happen, it has to go to the Privileges Committee or one of the committees.
I never appeared. The speaker made her own decision without me appearing before the Privileges Committee. So I'm going to court on that.
How long is your suspension?
30 days, according to her pronouncement.
So does that mean that within that 30 days, you can't go to Parliament, your duty as a parliamentary member representing your constituency?
I can't, but I'm getting a stay on Monday and not in Parliament on Tuesday. I'm sure that I'll get a stay against that decision until we review her decision.
So tell me again, how did you hear about your suspension? Were you formally issued a suspension letter from the Speaker of Parliament?
No, I was driving to Parliament and then I heard it on radio from my vehicle.
Is that a normal way of carrying out parliamentary duties or suspension when such cases
occur? I should have been seated in the House and she should have delivered the ruling, but she delivered the ruling in my absence.
But some people are also saying that you should have redrawn your statement in Parliament. Speaker of Parliament asked you to
of
do that.
Why did you just withdraw? Peter, No. The speaker said he has reserved his ruling.
Muniru Zulu is a Zambian parliamentarian. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, a former governor of Kasai Province says the international community should pressure the administration in Kinshasa to ensure the country's peace and stability. Herbert Kabasu Babu Katulondi is also the author of the recently published book, U.S. Marines in the Congo-Beni War. It says DRC citizens at home and in the diaspora must play their part in the effort to stabilize the country and to ensure the next general election is transparent and credible. His remarks come as civil society and religious groups express concern about armed groups, including the M23, who often carry out violence that target unarmed civilians. Katulondi tells me that the DRC, with its international partners, must find solutions to stopping those who profit from the security, economic, and political challenge facing the country.
First of all, I've been inspired by real concrete events of the residual military situation that is going on in the Congo right now. As you know, several militias and rebels and terrorists there, particularly those of ADF Nalu from Uganda. But also the fact that irrespective of the state of siege, people are still being butchered and others maimed. So I wanted to get the international community and the world to understand some of the major aspects and the factors or causes of the tragedy that is actually devastating Eastern DRC and shaking the and compromising security and the economic development in the in Africa's Great Lakes region.
So with this book, are there lessons that can be drawn currently?
Yes, sure. Actually, although it is a novel, in reality, it is a novel based on real facts, real events. One of the major contribution of the book to the better understanding of what is going on there, it's actually the reality of the role or responsibility of Congolese army officers themselves, local business people, and neighboring countries, also politicians from Eastern Congo like Beni, Mutwanga, Butembo, Oisha, Lubero, and on the other side of Uganda, people in Kampala, people in Kigali, people in Kenya, the network, intertwined network of army officers, politicians, business folks, and also and particularly, and that is the one of the aspects of ILF is there, how gold get into the transactions to affect money laundering by some terrorist groups. Unfortunately, with this East Africa community, no country, no leader, no state person, no member of parliament hammers, bangs the table to say, hey, let's tackle this issue of the illegal transaction of gold, wolframite, and coltan and pyrochlore. Let's sit down and talk about this issue.
Why are there so many armed groups in the DRC?
No, the question, your question is so pertinent. It is greed, you know, greed. That one of the major causes of this situation that is devastating, wreaking havoc in Eastern DRC, is actually the erosion of state authority in places like Ituri, Mutwanga. The Congolese have not been able to maintain and develop the post-colonial state in terms of administration, developing its administration, empowering the police and the army. So you have places in major chunks of the territory, Ituri, Lubero, that are stateless.
Where do the people of Congo go from here? And what role do you think the international community can still play in bringing about peace in Congo, especially with MONUSCO still active on the ground?
MONUSCO has failed abysmally. You heard even Mr. The Secretary General of UN, Mr. Guterres, saying that M23 is better armed than the MONUSCO. MONUSCO's got combat helicopters, missiles and so on and so forth, which M23, none of the armed groups there has. So I think, first of all, the Congolese themselves, because stability, social cohesion, the economic development is not the exclusive responsibility of the president and ruling elite. Civil society, the church, community, scholars, Congolese diaspora, they have to exert, pressurize the regime in terms of saying, let's find a consensus in terms of what are the concrete steps to be taken to create national cohesion and have elections that are propitious for peace, and what are the terms, conditions, mechanisms to empower the Congolese army, but also the state, so that it can take care of the people and the army can vanquish all these militias. The international community has to be sincere, impartial, and objective in also pressurizing the Congolese government, civil society, with sanctions.
Herbert Kabasu Babu Katolondi is the author of the recently published book, U.S. Marines in the Congo-Beni War. He spoke with me from Washington. Atul Tandon, the chief executive officer at Opportunity International, says the organization is committed to creating sustainable jobs in the developing world. The objective, he says, is to end global poverty. Through a network of 47 programs and support partners, the U.S.-based global nonprofit group provides small business loans, savings, insurance, and training to over 14 million people in developing countries. Tandon also says the organization creates opportunities for entrepreneurs to build their businesses, children to go to school, farmers to feed their communities, and families to end the cycle of generational poverty. For nearly 50 years, he adds, Opportunity International has developed innovative programs that use financial services, training, and support to aid development around the world. To learn more about the Pan-African reach of the group and its innovative financial solutions to tackling extreme poverty, I reach Atul Tandon via Skype.
You know, our focus, our realization was and continues that economic poverty requires economic solutions, Peter. And the most effective and probably the most lasting sustainable solution is sustainable income. So how do you get people who are relatively illiterate and have, little skills, if you will, and live in very difficult conditions economic and social conditions? How do you get them to earn a living? So our approach has been that, well, the best way to do that is to give them a hand up, not simply a hand out, but to give a hand up to make sure that they have the financial resources they need and then the skills and capacity building support that they need to actually start up small businesses, to learn new skills, and either to work for themselves or to get jobs. So that's been our focus, and today I can say we literally have we have a history of having banked millions of African clients, introduced everything from savings accounts for the extremely poor to loans to insurance to now things like low cost private schools to serve their children, and most recently extension into smallholder farmer support.
Is the replicability of the Opportunity International model elsewhere in Africa possible, and on a case-by-case basis, looking at it, how do strategies in integration differentiate while working alongside varying public sectors on the continent, if I may ask you?
Yeah, good question. So, I'll give you maybe possibly one sort of case study is in one case, and let's take Ghana as a good example of that. We have had now a presence in Ghana for about 25 years. We started with helping set up a local nonprofit in the Kumasi area, the northern part of the country, which is the agricultural belt of the country, and then from there, and understood very quickly that what was needed was not simply, serving the local community in terms of loans and banking support. What we really needed a financial institution that would serve them on a sustainable basis versus a nonprofit. So we actually helped set up one of the first social banks in Ghana. And that that was done in partnership, and I'm talking in the mid-2000s, where, you know, the idea that the poor were actually bankable was a foreign idea. Nobody wanted to believe it. So we said, well, let's go and show you how to do it. And that was, you know, really support from both American individuals, private donors, as well as the U.S. government, who supported us in what we call the Banking on Africa campaign.
In a few weeks' time, we are in October. In December, the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit will be held here in Washington. How best do you think the international community can engage with your organization with regards to how you can deepen commitment to Africa and help safeguard the continent's continued trajectory?
So, thank you for that question. And I would say a few things. You know, Africa has, there are one in terms of the human capacity and potential. You know, Africa represents both the present and the future. You know, when I'll be visiting both Uganda and Kenya in the next later this month. You know, look at Uganda. I mean, more than half the population is less than 15 years old. Tremendous potential to grow live better across not only Uganda, across the continent. So how do you invest in the young people in Africa? You know, first of all, in better education, which is where you're present. And secondly, now how to start to create jobs for these young people, which is where investment, everything from light industry to farming to technology and in the service sector is needed. And I think that's where nonprofits like ours can play a part in specific areas and small agricultural financing and education financing. In increasing the availability of jobs, especially technical jobs. I would say so that's in ag and education, but I think the future really of massive expansion, massive scaling lies in bringing American technology to making that available at the very, very core of for us, the financial fabric of providing services to the poor.
Atul Tandon is the Chief Executive Officer at Opportunity International. He spoke with me via Skype from Seattle, Washington. Cameroon's president has ordered officials to enforce a 2019 law on bilingualism and make life easier for English speakers in the French-speaking majority country. Complaints of discrimination against English speakers sparked a separatist conflict that since 2017 has left more than 3,500 people dead. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Civilians assembled at Yaoundé's city council this week to complain about difficulties they encounter in Cameroon's public offices because they speak only one of the Central African state's two official languages. Emmanuel Ngong, a 26-year-old engineer, says he was denied service in a public office because he spoke English.
Many government workers believe, perceive French should be the only language that should be spoken in Cameroon. I was irritated when I went to an office and I spoke in English and one man said, "Je ne connais pas votre anglais là."
The French sentence means, "I do not know your English." Civilians who fled the fighting in Western Cameroon between troops and separatists say they often face discrimination in public offices when speaking English. A December 2019 law states that English and French have the same value and should be used equally in public offices. It says Cameroonians should be able to express themselves in either language. Jean-Marie Baudou is one of the officials dispatched to enforce the bilingualism law. Baudou says people abuse public office by refusing to attend to civilians who speak either in English or French. Baudou says Cameroon President Paul Biya will no longer tolerate French-speaking workers imposing the French language on English-speaking citizens. He says English-speaking workers should also be patient when they receive French speakers in public offices. Bodo says all official documents should be translated into both English and French languages, and English and French speakers should be given equal access to jobs to stop marginalization that is causing tensions and threatening Cameroon's unity. Bodo said messages on all signboards should be in the two official languages, printed in the same character, to stop giving the impression that one language is superior because characters are larger. The government says after educating citizens on the importance of the two languages coexisting peacefully, it is now ordering people who do not speak the two languages to register in language schools. Signboards written in one language are being pulled down and replaced. Among the 10 towns the delegation is visiting this week are Yaoundé, Garoua, Maroua, and Cameroon's economic capital, Douala. Tamanjo Janogo is an official in Douala's 5th district.
Tous les mercredis, le francophone parle l'anglais, personnel anglophone parle le français.
He says to encourage living together and stop the dominance of the French over the English language, his council has made it compulsory for French speakers to speak only the English language every Wednesday. He says English speakers are also expected to speak only the French language on Wednesday. Tamanjo says many French speakers tell him that council workers are reluctant to speak English. Tamanjo spoke via the messaging app WhatsApp from Douala. The crisis began in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers took to the streets to denounce the dominance of French. The government responded with a crackdown, and separatists took up weapons, saying they were defending civilians from government troops. Cameroon rights groups say at least 3,500 people have since died in 5 years of fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
South Africa, one of the continent's most industrialized nations, is facing the worst electricity blackout in its history. One of South Africa's biggest industries, mining, is turning to solar power to keep operations running when power requirements fall short. For VOA, Linda Giftach reports from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Kanyisa, meaning let there be light, is the name of a new solar field outside Johannesburg. It's a phrase South Africans wish they could say as the country faces an energy crisis that's resulted in regular power cuts, called load shedding, of anywhere from 2 to 8 hours a day. For Goldfield South Deep Mine outside Johannesburg, it's meant the development of the solar plant couldn't be timelier. Martin Priest is the executive vice president for Goldfields.
From year one, we're saving, 130 odd million rand a year on electricity. I think the other real benefit is, though, is business interruption that we're eliminating. So where we would have been impacted by load curtailment, we start getting a more reliable source of energy, which keeps our business continuity.
Experts say the energy crisis is the result of years of missteps and mismanagement at the monopolized national power utility, Eskom. Both new and aging coal plants are experiencing regular breakdowns, and Eskom has failed to significantly invest in other reliable technologies to meet growing demands. Harmit Winkler is a physics professor at the University of Johannesburg.
And I think a lot of what's happening in the country is a result of some sort of reluctance to move decisively forward with building of solar and wind, simply because it means that other technologies are going to lose out.
Other technologies being coal, which the country also mines, as well as nuclear and, to a degree, natural gas. Rather than waiting for the country to resolve its conflicting energy interests, which are also muddied by politics, the mining sector is increasingly taking matters into its own hands. Glenn Wyla is the director of the Wits Mining Institute at the University of Witwatersrand.
They can no longer rely on Eskom as the sole supplier of electricity. And for this, there is more of a consensus to say that by 2025, at least 20 to 30% of the electricity that is being supplied to different mining houses, they have to be generating it by themselves using different forms of renewables.
Wind and solar account for just 7% of power generation nationally. Even without an energy crisis, Nwala said companies with mandates to reduce carbon emissions are uneasy about the grid's reliance on coal. South Deep's Preece says its target of net zero by 2050 was a major factor to install the 50-megawatt solar field and start planning a wind farm.
Decarbonization is absolutely vital for our world. There's overwhelming evidence that if we don't address the carbon crisis in the world, we're driving the world to extinction. So we want to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
Experts say the rise of renewables among the economic heavyweight mining could steer the transition nationally for other industries and the grid. At the same time, it would also result in major losses in customers and income for debt-ridden Eskom. Either way, a major shift in power generation won't happen overnight. Solar farms like South Deep's are not a one-size-fits-all solution. But companies say as South Africa's energy crisis gets worse, solar makes sense not only for the environment, but financially too. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Trade Organization, or WTO, predicts global trade growth will slow sharply to 1% in 2023, down from the expected high of 3.5% this year. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva on the WTO's revised trade forecast.
WTO economists say trade has played a key role in keeping the global economy running throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. While merchandise trade plunged amid lockdowns in 2020, they note it subsequently rebounded, keeping the world supplied with food, medicine, and other essential goods. However, they say multi-pronged crises, including the pandemic, climate shocks, and the war in Ukraine, continue to cause supply chain disruptions. Fiscal and monetary policies and inflationary pressures, they note, are causing energy and commodity prices to rise. They say low-income developing countries in particular face serious risks from insecurity and debt distress. WTO Director General Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala says most regions will likely register slightly positive export growth in 2023, with the exceptions of Africa and the Middle East. Both regions, she says, will experience negative export growth. She says world GDP next year is expected to slow to 2.3%, down nearly a full percentage point from the WTO's previous estimate.
Policymakers face unenviable choices as they attempt to find an optimal balance among fighting inflation, maintaining employment, and advancing important policy goals such as the transition to cleaner energy. Trade restrictions may be a tempting response to economic distress, but these would only deepen inflationary pressures and reduce living standards.
Okonjo-Iweala says free trade generates growth and can help keep prices from rising. For example, keeping markets open for food trade, she says, will increase the availability of essential foodstuffs and maintain downward pressure on prices.
Our monitoring work on food trade has pointed to some recent backsliding on restrictions, so we need to remain vigilant. Looking ahead, a better response to the supply chain vulnerabilities exposed by the past 2 years is to build a more diversified, less concentrated base for producing goods and services.
She says diversification will boost economic growth and contribute to supply resilience and long-term price stability. She says it also can help meet current and future economic challenges. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The second round of preliminary matches in the CAF Champions League got underway on Friday with El Merrikh of Sudan scoring a 2-0 victory over Al Ahly Tripoli of Libya at the El Obeid Stadium. On Saturday, Tanzania's Young Africans played a 1-1 draw with Al Hilal Omdurman. ASK Okara lost at home 1-2 to JS Kabylie. In other results, ASN Niger Lake of Niger also lost
lost 2-0 at home to Moroccan side Club Athletic, while Angolan club Petro Atletico got an important victory on the road with a 3-0 victory over Cape Town City of South Africa. 10 matches are scheduled to be played today. Now to Gabon, where the president of the National Football League, Brice Mbika Njambo, has announced that the Gabonese National Division 1 Football Championship will return to action later this month for the 2022-2023 season. Gabon's top-tier championship has been on break since July 31st when ASO Stade Manji defeated Union Sportive of Bitab to emerge champions. The 2022-2023 campaign is expected to end in June with a break in November, the date for the kickoff of the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. Staying with football news, French superstar striker Kylian Mbappe will earn a record $128 million in annual earnings to top the list of the world's highest paid football players, according to a report by Forbes magazine. Mbappe signed a 3-year contract extension in May to remain with dominant Ligue 1 side Paris Saint-Germain. Forbes reported the deal will bring Mbappe about $110 million for his salary and season share of a signing bonus plan and estimated $18 million in annual endorsement income. In basketball news, Democratic Republic of Congo clubs CNSS and BC Makomeno will make the short journey to Cameroon for the FIBA Zone 4 Women's Club Championship scheduled for the 11th to the 16th of October in Cameroon. The Congolese clubs will do battle against Cameroonian teams over those up station who are the champions of their national competition and University de Douala who finished in second place. At stake is an opportunity to compete in the FIBA Africa Championships Cup Women, which will take place in Mozambique in December. In rugby news, the 9th Women's Rugby World Cup kicked off in front of a world record audience at the Auckland's Eden Park in New Zealand on Saturday. In the opening match of the tournament, South African women Buck failed to secure a victory. France, ranked number 4 in the world, beat South Africa, ranked number 11, 40-5. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
Please, yes. Excuse me, because... is on?
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Love, 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 love. Oh, my love's a love. Love, 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 love. Oh, and love's so real. And love's so nice. And love said, come for me. Cause love's so right. Baby, you said you could give me the word and everything more. But my world's up and down and now everything's gone. My mama told me, baby girl, you gotta be strong. And when you find true love, you know you can't go wrong. I don't wanna ever be wrong. I just want some real love. I just want some real love.
Yeah. breaking. It's bleeding like never before. It's like I'm running, but I'm going nowhere. And it don't feel like it'll ever get better. It's like I'm falling. Don't like this feeling. I wanna fall asleep and wake up like I was dreaming.
My life, heaven knows, and I mean, how you be my wife, heaven knows, heaven knows, alone, damn your life, shall I, what I feel for you, baby, KOT Jazzy, tell me I know be Mr. Don Jazzy, I want to marry before 30, I'm a show Jazzy.
Make the boots go different direction.
Make the boots go different direction.
We go, make we cause commotion.
Ah, cause commotion.
Make money, my brother. Chase the quacha. They say I go pop, yeah, we know go so far. Everybody make a run, phone and get a lever. No, we make a beat you. I see my brother Buga, make we pepper them, yeah. Now so the thing go, everybody she go di melio. Chico di melio, Megabon, let's go. Chico di melio, Megabon, so mi jo, hey. Afina vana, munaba majo, mayohu, indi kanyama, konyaka katano. Show money, them go, low, baby, go low, we chug be low, low, hey. Afina vana, munaba majo, mayohu, indi kanyama, konyaka katano. When we show money, them go, low, baby, go low, we chug be low, low. Asistana, tatesa. Make the boots go different direction.
Make the boots go different direction.
We go, make we cause commotion.
Cause commotion.
Make money, my brother. Chase the quacha. Chase the echo pop, yeah. We don't go so far. Say,
power. I think I'll let you
Make the boots go different direction.
Make the boots go different direction.
We go, make we cause commotion.
Cause commotion.
Make money, my brother. Chase the quacha. Chase the echo pop, yeah. We don't go so far.
And I see you in China.
tena koso singizi siku kucha minajua. I send ya kilini moyoni bado we wanizuzua. When are you coming home Senje? Tell me are you on your way? Kife tukipenda na Kiromeo na Julia. I send ya na koso singizi siku kucha minajua. I send ya kilini moyoni bado we wanizuzua. When are you coming home Senje? Tell me are you on your way? Kife tukipenda na Romeo na Julia. I send the banner.
Send it. Hello, hello, hello,
hello, hello.
If you get to hear this song,
Sanje, come
somebody
on.
Loves you.
Oh,
send it. Hello, hello, hello. Change your mind and come back home. Somebody loves you.
Oh baby girl, I saw your body fine. Bring up close to me, make a right come. Never go do you one night stand. Girl, just the be me wanna wife up. I tell you small, even small. Oh yeah, cause my eye and this my eye. Let's go Santorini. From there we go to Fiji. Take you around the world, my baby girl. We don't go tired. Bani oba sumami, Bani oba sumami, Bani oba sumami, Bani oba sumami. You tell me say my body where she wanna be money, money. So baby girl, I tell you, make it come, make it jolly, jolly, yeah. Oh, don't be a door, say a kayo. A tough fool by you, so many way. Nobody in a day, Miss Saka, body in a day. When I'm out in a day, yeah, me and me. When I'm out in a day, Miss Saka, body in a day.
see me. Ajay, I call me. I order to me see her. Sign in need her. Oh, I shock, I just can't believe it. My heart broken up in pieces. Time will heal my wounds. Until then, I pick up and Ajay. Don't know what to do, I feel so confused. Thinking it's a dream, it's like deja vu.
Was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Kwame Ofori, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, not to oversee workmen is to leave your purse open. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.